Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And before anything else, I want to take a moment to mention a way you can support the show. That is by joining our subscription on Apple Podcasts. This will grant you access to exclusive versions of every episode, which are ad-free and include post-interview chats with the guest, where often the best parts of the episode can be found, including recently one of the guests volunteered to take over my Hinge profile and kind of blind date me with people, and we're not sure how that's going to go yet. So fun things like that, and also things that I maybe hold back a little bit, and I'm like, we'll just save this for when there's less, I almost said earballs, when there's less ears. So I don't know, maybe more of my secrets are in there. Anyway, for a few quid a month, you can join us as a subscriber. You just head to the Apple Podcasts app. There should be a button right there on this podcast page to join and try it out. Your support means so much to us. And with that said, this week we have somebody else who is incredibly worth it. A returning guest, the first ever returning guest on the pod. So I'm so excited. You already know them as an incredible comedian who travels the world telling stories of the wildest dates. And I reckon there's been some more since we last spoke. So please welcome Eleanor Gabriel.
Hi, thank you for having me back. This is so exciting.
I know. Yeah, we were talking off air about, like, I don't really know what the format is on a repeat guest, so we'll find that out together.
I know. Well, actually, I do have a bit of a follow-up from the last dating story I told about the guy who got banned from all the florists. So I actually have a follow-up for that because it's something that I talk about in my new show. And then he came along to the show, which was super awkward, and heard me talk about the date. So that was, yeah, it was pretty awkward, not gonna lie, but it was fine. Everything's fine.
Wow. Okay. No, I have questions though. So talk me through the scenario. Did you know that he was going to be at the show?
No. So I guess I'd probably just do a little bit of a catch up for people if you haven't listened to the first episode. Basically, I went on a date with this like fan who came to my show last year, slid into my DMs, which is how all good millennial stories start. And we went on this not a date. I said to him it was not a date. I'm like, not a date. And he thought it was a date, so it doesn't matter what I thought. So we went out, we had pizza. Anyway, I invited him over. I was super lonely in lockdown. I invited him over the following week, and he bought a big bunch of roses and then continued to tell me that they're from the only florist in Berlin that lets him in. So he'd been banned from every florist in Berlin. He made me a little gift as well, which you can see on my Instagram.
Which we should maybe quickly caveat there. Being banned from them for being so pedantic and taking so long to choose. He wasn't setting fire to florists.
Yeah, just like walking in, they're like, no. He was very meticulous about his floral arrangements and have obviously pissed a lot of florists off, German florists. And yeah, so basically I thought it was a crazy story. He was Italian, I'm half Italian. So like I had this big thing in my head being like, oh, it's going to be super romantic. We know each other's cultures, it'll be fine. And it was just super creepy, like super creepy date. And so anyway, I talked about that on the podcast last time. And I've been developing it and telling it on stage for the last 2 months in my new show. And so I was telling it on stage and I was in Amsterdam. And I had this couple like filming me while I was telling this story. And I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. But, you know, people always have their phones out during the show. That's okay. I'll just roll with it. And then I finished the story. And then this guy who was filming goes, excuse me, I have a story. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because I'm used to people just, you know, randomly yelling out stuff about their sex lives or whatever during my shows. And he said to me, oh, I know someone who knows you. And I was like, okay, who? He's like, oh, he lives in Berlin. And I was like, oh no. And all the audience was like, no. And I was like, was he Italian? And the guy was like, yes. And the whole audience just like starts laughing. I'm like, oh shit. So they filmed the set. They sent it to him. I was like, oh my God. Because sometimes, most of the times when I'm telling my dating stories on stage, most of them do know. I like have this kind of, you know, contract with them saying, can I talk about this on stage or like whatever. But with him, it was just super weird and super creepy that I was like, oh no, like I don't want to talk to this person anymore. He's a bit.
But also he didn't know what you do, right? So he kind of went into aggressively pursuing a date with you knowing the context of your work.
Exactly. And I think there is, and it's happened in the past where I've had messages from people being like, hey, can I take you on a date? And then I'll come to the show and can you roast me and tell me how bad I was? And I'm like, that's a bit weird, but everyone has their own fetishes, their kinks, like whatever. So I didn't think anything of it. I did some shows in Berlin. I was always checking the door list to make sure that his name wasn't on there. And I did a show a couple of weeks ago here, and I did the show and I checked the door list and his name wasn't there. And I was like, okay, great. And I did the show and there was this awkward feeling in the room the entire time. And I was like, oh no. And I was just like, something's just off. And then after the show, I saw him and he was in like the third row and I'm like, oh no. And so he waited for about an hour. I was talking to everyone after the show and he waited for me for an hour and he came up to me after the show and he's like, Elena, I just want to say that, you know, I think the story was so funny. It was so great, you know, to hear you talking about our date and, you know, but, you know, I don't mind. I don't care because I know that every night for the past 8 weeks, you're on stage telling this story about me. So I know that you're thinking of me. And I'm like, and that was it. I was like, oh no, block, delete, get rid of this person. So that was the end, I guess, to that story.
Wow.
From last time.
When we thought it couldn't get any weirder. Also, what a strange attempt at power play there to be like, oh, you know what'll really show her? I'll turn up, I'll pay the price of admission, I'll wait an hour while she talks to her many fans, and I'll just sit here and brood, and that'll show her.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and then he sent me like a voice message and a message, and I was like, I didn't even bother listening to it. I was like, you know what, like, just don't engage, because it's been like, I think also it's just sometimes these people, there's some kind of personalities or people that just want to be, I don't know, attached to, like, I don't know, to have someone who's so extroverted and kind of really enjoys being roasted or talked about or just being talked about, I guess, in a sense. So part of me is like, I don't know if I want to put this story on YouTube because he'll probably love it. But then otherwise I'm like, but it's fine. That's done. I've moved on from the Italians.
Yes. Yes. Understandable. But it's some experience. And I agree with you that it could attract all sorts of people for very strange reasons, that you essentially were able to make him a person in that room of otherwise strangers. And some people could really get on board in that. And that might seem like the better option. Not necessarily the case.
Yeah, no. Weird. It's just a weird experience.
And I can relate to it. I feel like of all the guests I've ever spoken to, you're the one where I feel like we've got the most synergy between how publicly we talk about this stuff and all the sort of hurdles you have to jump around. Because everyone wants to hear the stories. But most people don't really want to be in the stories. And there we have a power vacuum.
Of course. And I think also when you are, like, when I am telling my dating stories on stage, like, they're all based in truth. Like, everything has happened in the stories. Nothing is fabricated. But sometimes for the sake of the story and for the arc and for the comedy, sometimes you need to, like, mesh two people together or three people together because they have similarities, but there's, like, little different things that work. And at the end of the day, it's still, you know, it's still show business and it's still on stage. So you need to sort of heighten it and do that. But everything has happened. But yeah, it's more, you sort of have to be creative in the way that you put the stories together. But with this guy, like, I literally, like, I didn't have to change anything. It was just so weird and so creepy and just, like, made my skin crawl. And I was like, ugh. So anyway, it's part of the fun that when people, I don't know, admire you so much, they want to be part of your life in any way possible, I guess. I'm not sure.
Yes. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot, actually, is the type of people that we attract. And I think I've mentioned it before on the show that that's something I really encourage friends of mine to look out for, because you can often see other people's patterns better than you can yourself. And just because one particular group of people might be the ones that tend to elbow to the front of the queue to date you, doesn't mean they're the most appropriate people for you. Often there's like an ulterior motive or some reason why particular traits in people seem to keep coming up. Do you know what I mean?
No, definitely. And I mean, you're talking to someone who's dated a lot of narcissists, a lot of fuckboys, a lot of these kind of like very charismatic men. And I mean, I've dated a lot of pickup artists as well, and they look for weaknesses in people. And when they're looking for someone to date, it's more, yeah, like narcissistic. It's like, what can they get out of this relationship with this person? And it's not actually based in love or care. It's just, how can I use this person to get me to the next level? And I think that's it. Like there's, you know, I think for me in particular, like I can get very blindsided by charisma and by, you know, like these people like who come in into your life, but they're the ones you actually have to be probably a little bit more careful of. But it's hard when you kind of just, you know, if you're a little bit weak at the time and you, like that's what happened in a previous relationship. I was very, very, very sick and all I just wanted was someone to love and to look after me. And then this charismatic person came along, very narcissistic and just knew how to work that weakness and that's how you kind of fell. So I think there's maybe a few lessons to be learned in that like when you do come across people who are very like, you know, in your face and charismatic and stuff like that, they can actually have maybe an ulterior motive to dating you.
And it kind of stings to say, doesn't it? Because we want somebody to be able to come along and get a bit of that, you know, fairy tale nonsense where it's like they don't even know me and they already see what a catch I am. And it's like that doesn't quite add up in reality. There's something totally. They've seen. It's not necessarily who you are if they don't even know you yet. How would that make sense?
Exactly. And I think, I mean, I've been doing therapy now pretty much every week since January this year or December last year, because I just got to a point where I was like, I'm just sick of dating these same people. And and it's just like, you know, it's like a trait. And I talk about this in my new show where it's like, and I'm not sure, maybe I can ask you about this from a male perspective, but as women, we're told like, oh, don't worry. Like you've got to go through that asshole to find your Prince Charming. You know, you've got to kiss the frog to find your Prince Charming. And it's like, great. I have to subject myself to like years of mental trauma just so at the end of it, I might get a Prince Charming. Like it's just this thing that we hear when in actual fact, like all of the guys I was dating were getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I say in the show, like at this rate, my next boyfriend will be Joe Exotic. And I'm like, I'm not joking, because I was like, that's probably what's going to come out next if I don't change my behavior now and if I don't change the kind of people that I'm attracted to now. So yeah, and I guess I will ask you, like, is that something that men here or something, or like, or, you know, do you have to date a bad person and then at the end you end up with someone you will find love? Like, because that's what I find quite interesting. Heterosexual women get told that, and I guess I'm going to ask you, have you ever heard that growing up? Or
yes, I think there's definitely pressures as well. I think there's a different attachment of shame. I don't think that's the same level, right? And there can be such a mentality around men being the ones that pick, and so there can be such a position of privilege to be perceived as the one that hasn't picked yet, as opposed to the one that hasn't been picked,
right?
You know, and of course that's talking like heteronormatively, it gets more complicated from there, but I definitely see that. And there's certain things like people are not asking me about having kids. I don't think in my whole life I've ever been asked if I want kids outside of a dating scenario. And yet that's something I'm really passionate about. But it's almost like it's just either not assumed or it's not something that I need to worry about because I'm not giving birth to them. It's so strange how the...
Interesting.
How disparate the treatment can be with men and women on that. And yeah, I think... I'm trying to... Sorry, I wasn't prepared for this question, so I'm slightly fluffing it.
No. It's okay, because I mean, I've been asking a few friends and stuff just in my research for the show, because I mean, as a woman, I know we hear this all the time. Oh, don't worry. Just, you know, you break up with a bad guy and then you'll find the love of your life next and kind of stuff. And I guess I've been talking to... I guess more of my like cis male friends who I guess would say like, oh yeah, but not really, I guess, because like you said, it's like they're the ones who are seen as like the ones who pick kind of thing. And oh, and then I guess it can be a bit more like derogatory in a term to just be like, oh, she was just a manipulative bitch. But like they don't ever say that, like, oh, you have to go through the bitch to find your princess. Like that's not, you know, it's not really something that, I mean, I've never heard, and I've never heard my straight friends say. And I guess obviously in a different, I guess in the queer community as well, like with gay men, like I'm sure it's, I'm not quite sure about that. And like, it's just so many little nuances when it comes to that. But I think coming from where I am in a kind of relatively, I'm bisexual, but I'm kind of probably date more men than I do women. So that's coming in from that thing. So don't stress about the question. I was just asking, like, if you had something off the cuff and be like, oh yeah, like actually no, like this or like
but
whatever.
Maybe that's part of it. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that's part of your answer. The fact that I didn't really have a fully formed thought about that is possibly a reflection of experiencing less pressure to couple up. Even what you said there about talking about men being referred to as fuckboys and women being referred to as bitches. You know, even with that, there seems to be such a difference in how derogatory that is, that fuckboys can be kind of glamorized in a way of like, oh, I got caught by another one. It's sort of seen as more fun. And it's like, somehow women will really ruin your life and fuckboys are just there for like entertainment and a diversion towards true love.
True. And I think like, but I mean, on the flip side, because we have this, I guess maybe it's a stereotype that women can be quite manipulative and things like that. But for me, it's like I came out of a very controlling relationship with a narcissist, very like a lot of coercive control. I was gaslit all the time. And I think, yeah, there's a disparity between, oh, people say, oh, like, but yeah, fuck boys, they're just like, you know what men are like and blah, blah, blah. Whereas like with women, they sort of do that. But I think really, and what I've been coming to terms with in this past kind of year of therapy and dating research and doing all this sort of stuff is that like men and women, we're the same. Like we're really the same, but like maybe behaviorally things come out differently. But at the end of the day, you can still have the same experience with, you know, a straight man, a straight woman, or a gay man, look, or a lesbian. What I've discovered is like narcissist, sociopathic, like people, like there's no gender boundaries for that kind of that thing. It's, I mean, you can find yourself in a toxic relationship no matter what. And I talk about this in my show, and it was really interesting because I have a lot of women come up to me after the show saying like, oh, I was in a similar situation around an abusive relationship. But I've actually had a lot of men as well come up to me after the show and say like, thank you so much. Like I was in an abusive relationship with, you know, like gay men saying with their partner or with straight men, with women. Like, and so it's one of these things where I think out there and the stigma and like, it's kind of like, oh yeah, just fuck boys, like straight men are the ones who do this. But it's actually, yeah, worldwide and no genders, no age, no like whatever. It's crazy people exist in the world no matter what. So.
Right. And I think you get some points right there. Because that is such a good point about, I'm of the same mentality that we get treated so much more differently based on gender than the reality actually dictates, that so much of this is socially reinforced construct. And one example you've reminded me of, it's more common amongst lesbians to refer to as each other as fuckboys. So clearly a lot of this language does carry across. It's more to do with how commonly it's used as opposed to, no, it doesn't exist because this person's a woman, so she couldn't fit the stereotype. And it's wild out here. And I know what you mean, that it's complicated. And I was thinking the other day about how we like to have this mentality that in dating, you go through these kissing the frogs, traveling through the asshole, or however you phrased it.
Traveling through the asshole, I like the imagery of that. It's,
you said, I think
like
you said,
literal and like,
you said you have to go through the asshole, and that was a lot more literal in my head than it maybe was in yours.
I mean, wherever your brain is taking you today, Bobby, I don't mind wherever it's
going. So I think we do have this mentality, right, that you kiss the frogs or whatever else and you, along the way, get better at dating and it's somehow more linear than it is. And oftentimes, and I think quite a few of your dating stories end up encapsulating this quite well, we still have these kind of attractions to people that don't make sense or don't necessarily serve us. And so it's more to do with getting better at consciousness as opposed to it being linear. And it is all too easy often to be like, oh, I know that person isn't right for me. And sometimes the awareness is not your friend, where you're like, I somehow feel in a position of power because I know how inappropriate a match they are. And therefore, it feels safer for me to have this moment of weakness or vulnerability or whatever and go for them, because it's like, but I'm in control because I know I'm making a bad choice.
Yeah. It's true. And I've just been talking to a friend of mine who is in a kind of an abusive relationship, but it's frustrating being, you know, now not the one in an abusive relationship and seeing it clearly and saying like, you know, like you need to get out or you need to do that. But there is, I think there's kind of, how do I say, like safety and to like, it's comfortable in sometimes in an abusive relationship, because what you don't like, even for me, like, you know, I look back on the relationship and it wasn't all bad. Like, I think there's this mentality as well of like, oh, if you're in a bad or toxic relationship, it's just always bad. Like, you know, you're always sad, you're always crying, you're always angry, you're always fighting. But really, I've had some of the best times of my life with my ex, who, yes, it was toxic, but I had some of the most incredible experiences and laughter and all this sort of stuff. So it's just this balance of going like, what am I willing to accept and put up with in this relationship? And some people are happy to stay in that. And it's sad from the outside because you're like, no, get out. But at the end of the day, I think it is that more conscious awareness and to be, I mean, I've been really big now on feeling like my intuition and like my energy when I'm with someone. That's been a really big thing that I've been working on, maybe because I'm meditating. I've been meditating every day for the last couple of years. So that I think is being more in tune with how my body reacts to people. And like, even with the Italian guy, I remember like when I first met him, I was like, his cologne made me feel like, and I just felt like, I remember just getting home feeling like I needed to have a shower because I was like, oh, this is not good. But then I still continue to invite him over again. So I think those little things, you just have to be like, no, like just look at the little details and how you feel. And if you actually really like this person, or if it's, you know, they're charismatic or they made you laugh or they're sexy or they've got a six pack, like, you know, it's like it's not all about that at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think that is partly the pressure that's disproportionately put on women as well, that you've got to compromise and be like, okay, I have some bad options here, but this one is least bad. And
yes.
Though I don't think there would be as much of that if there wasn't such a like, oh, well, you've got to be thinking about kids and, you know, do you want to be single at this age? And you know, even good friends of us can do it and be like, oh, you're the single one of the group. And I just wanted to mention one more thing about what you referenced there with the abusive relationship and reconciling that there were good times, because I think that's so difficult. And that can partly relate to this victim blaming that we can have in our cultures, where it feels wrong to admit that there were happy times. And it feels very difficult to reconcile that, both that it can be true at the same time that you should have never been in that relationship, but also that you did have happy times in it. And you don't regret in isolation, even if you might not be glad for the relationship in general.
Of course. And I think, but I think that also takes time. And for me, it's taken me a while to get to that point, because, you know, you sort of, once your emotion starts, like, you know, time with everything, it heals everything. Like when you can look back at it. But yeah, I mean, I had some of the most incredible experiences of my life with this person. And now it's like the thought of even seeing him again or anything just feel like I do not, like, it's kind of, you know, it's like one of those things where you're like, you talk about your ex in the past tense because they're dead, but sometimes you kind of like, not that I wish they were dead, but it's just kind of like, oh, they're, you know, I never want to see them again. And it is almost, you know, like they are, in a sense, like, not literally, and I didn't murder anyone, but it's like, it just helps you, I think, kind of look back on the good times and realize there was happiness in amongst the sadness. But, you know, when I was in this relationship, I always kept writing lists of like the pros and the cons of the relationship. It was just some way for me to rationalize what was going on. And it was always like the cons way, way outnumbered the pros in the relationship. And I think when I kept seeing that written on paper, it was like, okay, like, yes, we have good times, but look at all this, like, look at this, like, scrolling down this list of like all the bad times. So I don't know. I think it's something, yeah, that I've been talking about in the show and just realizing that, especially as a woman, like now, I just had my birthday this week, I'm 33 and I am thinking about kids. And I think that's also why I was in this relationship for so long, because I could sort of, you know, you sort of tell yourself, oh yeah, but like, I'll get kids and I'm not going to find anyone else. And I'm, you know, my eggs are dying and like all this sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you know, it's better to be, I'm happier single. Like, and my life has just gotten so much better since I left that relationship. And it's like this stigma of going like, oh, you don't have to be, like, I would rather be single and happy than in a relationship and unhappy just because I'm in a relationship. Like, that doesn't fulfill me and it shouldn't fulfill anyone else. So that's kind of the PSA that I'm pushing at the moment, just for everyone, like regardless of gender or sexuality and stuff as well. It's just like, it just, you're better off being happy and single than unhappy and in love, quotation marks.
Yeah, I totally agree. More points right there.
just like, yeah, like, I don't know. But it's, yeah, it's just interesting, like definitely getting older into my 30s. And I know you were talking about kids as well. And it's like, you know, not many people really ask you when you're single in your 30s, like, do you want kids? It's only if you're in sort of a relationship that that happens. But I think this year I've really come to terms with, and you sort of feel shame about saying that you want kids when you're single. I think there is this kind of stigma about it because, you know, I think for me, I find as a woman, a single woman, to say I want kids, people are like, ugh. And then you feel bad about putting that on dating apps or anything because, you know, you don't know how people will feel about that. Like, oh, she's just a desperate woman looking for semen to into her. anyway, but it's a weird time, I think, dating now. I've kind of been out of it for a little bit. So I'm looking at getting back into it now. And I'm like, oh, God. I feel a bit about it.
Yeah, and I really want to talk about that actually because this is something which I think I have a more unusual perspective than most people on because I have wanted to, I said kids earlier, technically, to be accurate, I would like to raise a kid. You know, the amount that grants you being a parent and we'll see how that goes. I don't know. I don't know the reasoning, but it's in my head, it's always been one. And I think for me, at least, it makes sense to base that idea of your future in what's currently happening. So I can, of course, see what my parents would be like to an extent as grandparents. I know which two of my friends, I really like the idea of being godparents. I want to adopt. And so that's something that I've had to read up about a lot and understand. I've always been passionate about adopting. So even when I was little, I would like try and get my parents to adopt another kid. I think I partly had that like white guilt of like, we've got a spare room and that feels wrong and I want another sibling. And depending on the day, it was more one or other reason. Yeah, so it's been something that I've had in my mind for a long time. And I've had all these kind of ideas around it. So like one of my friends that I've already pre-asked her to be the godmother before the kid even exists. And she's gone through the adoption system herself. And so has a firsthand experience that I don't in some ways. And, you know, I've got all these ideas. And what I don't have is this template hole of where the other parent goes. And that's the bit that really surprises people.
Yeah.
And yet, for me, that feels a safer option than, I'm aware I'm drawing a complete opposite here, but I think at times it feels we're encouraged to go to the far opposite, where it's like, okay, idolize this kind of dream person and then find someone to squash into that mold. And then oftentimes with the amount of pressure you can feel that you're under, I worry, does that mean you compromise your life for other people's ambitions or other people's timelines of you? And I think that's a lot to put on an imaginary person, that they're going to be your partner and that they're going to raise a kid with you. And so for me, you know, being a single parent is possible with adoption. It's more difficult. But then, you know, again, I have people be really surprised that I would even be open to that. And that can include friends of mine who are single parents. And I'm like, how far down the rabbit hole do we go sometimes where it's like, oh, all of us know really incredible single parents. And I'm not saying it's not difficult, but it is possible. And it's better one happy parent than two unhappy ones, you know, that kind of stuff.
No, exactly. And I mean, relationships are all about compromise. So it's one of those things where I think you have to be very lucky to have a partner who, especially I think as you get older, like if you're probably younger and you meet and you have that relationship, like as you get older, it's more difficult because people have careers and they have goals and they have like this kind of stuff. So it's hard to sort of like fit in a kind of life. And it is this thing where I kind of think about it. So a friend of mine from my hometown back in Australia, she wanted kids and could never find like a good partner or anything like that. So she literally just went to a sperm bank and got pregnant, and she's just having the baby by herself. She's got an amazing like friendship group around her that love and support her. And yeah, it's weird that there is a little bit of like kind of stigma about it, but I think also like, I think it's such a great thing. Like if you want children and you can't find a partner to do that, then I think it's totally fair and valid that you can do that because, yeah, I know so many of my friends had like, I come from a very lucky family. My parents are still together. They've been together for like 36 years and they're still in love and like, you know, very kind of, I guess, traditional kind of family life, I guess. But so many of my friends' parents divorce when they're in school or they have a single parent or it's co-parenting or this kind of thing. And I just think it's a different age of parenting now where there shouldn't be any like shame attached to being a single person, just wanting a kid and going out and, you know, making it happen. However that happens, whether it's adoption or whether it's a sperm donor or whether it's a friend who you're like, hey, can I just have some of your sperm, please? Thank you so much. Like, and I've been talking with my gay best friend. I remember asking him when I was 18, I said, if I'm single when I'm 40, can I just borrow your sperm? Cause I want a baby. And we had a chat a couple of weeks ago when he was here and he was like, yeah, like if you get to a point where you want it, I'm happy to donate it. And I think, yeah, it's, I don't know, I wouldn't feel weird about telling people that anymore. Like I'm just kind of like, fuck it. Like there's so many different standard family lives and relationships now that I think anything is possible. I mean, even adoption as well. Like that's also a very, my cousin is adopted from Cambodia. So I've seen how that went basically from they adopted him when he was about 4. And I've sort of seen that and how challenging that is, particularly coming from a very different culture. Like he's Cambodian and my family are from Italy. So they took him from Cambodia to Italy, which is Italy sometimes is not very the nicest place when it comes to like racism. It's quite prevalent in Italy, as I guess it kind of can be everywhere. But I saw this sort of struggle and I've seen that. But also it's on the flip side, like that is such an amazing thing, taking someone from an orphanage and giving them another opportunity into a life that, you know, would never have been possible. So I've kind of seen all different aspects of how to, you know, have a family and I don't know, but I understand where you're coming from because I'm kind of like that point now where I'm like, I don't know if a partner's there, but I want a child. So we'll see. Watch this space. I don't know how that'll happen.
Yeah. And I think as I get older, I care less about this making sense to people. That I'm aware that it just won't make sense to a lot of people, and that's fine. But what it does feel is very real for me, and that these are very much my own priorities. You know, I think one thing I can say about myself is I have not really inherited a whole belief system off my parents. Like at times it seems is the common thing to do. Is that, I'm like saying it and like, is that a controversial thing to say? Well, what I mean is I'm confident that my values are my own. And so for me, like having a kid is high up there. It's higher than like marriage. I could sort of take or leave.
Yeah, right.
Having a partner is the priority of having a kid. And so that may not add up to what a lot of people have in mind and what we're encouraged to think of when we're growing up. But it does feel like my own genuine thought process, and I guess that's like,
yeah, no, I think it's amazing, and I think it's nice, it's like refreshing as well to hear a male say that as well, because I think as females we're always like, oh, I want a baby, I want this, but like I think there needs to be more, I don't know, like more men, like, I mean, however you identify, like just to come out and say like, oh yeah, like I want kids and I want them. And also there is a social pressure I find at the moment about having kids and like the climate, like that's something that I hear all the time. Like I've got a few female friends where I'm like, oh, I want kids. Like, but what about the climate? And I was like, yeah, I know. But like, you know, it's like, I don't know. There's like that's a whole other kind of conversation, but you know, there is there's a lot of stuff to think about, but I think it's really refreshing. And I really, you know, I love hearing that from you saying, you know, I want a child and I want kids, and it's kind of nice to hear. So thank you. It kind of gives me a little bit of hope in the world right now. So yeah.
And I'm sorry to hear about people saying stuff like, you know, what about the climate? Because I understand the concerns, you know what I mean? I've nothing against where that's coming from, but it's also feels very simplistic because it's like, well, there are so many things that are bad for the climate. I don't think weddings are eco-friendly. You know, all that confetti, that food for one day, all the people flying in, you know, I don't know if we're in a place where we can override something that is so to do with our biology and what we aspire to and how we're raised as, but the climate, and therefore I'm going to U-turn on that. that feels harsh, even if I can understand it can be coming from a good place.
Oh, totally. And I think also there is like the argument where it's kind of like, okay, cool. But like, if you're going to raise your child with in a kind of way where they are like conscious of the environment and of climate change and stuff like, that means you're then raising someone with those, you know, you're conditioning them as a child to be like, okay, like we need to do this for the climate. We need to do that. Like, you know, it's not all about like, oh, just like having a kid is bad, but it's like, yeah, but what if that kid is intelligent and can create something that will help the world or this kind of thing? So, I mean, you know, there's such an argument about it. And sometimes I don't even want to say I want kids.
Look at us. Did you think we were going to come onto this episode and be this broody?
It's so funny because I mean, you've probably got me in a place this week of like, you know, just had a birthday and like turning, you know, getting older into my 30s and really actively thinking about this. And I was dating a really young guy, and that was the reason why we broke up, was because I want the opportunity to have children, and he's like, he wouldn't want to have kids for at least like another 8 years. And at that point I'm going to be in my 40s, and it just doesn't work out. So I think it's been really prevalent on my mind for, you know, a while, and obviously this week as well. So just like, it's interesting that came up as I guess a topic to talk about as well. So
yeah, well, I'm very grateful for you having the conversation with me. It's something that I don't talk about a huge amount because it feels like something I have to explain to an extent. And I hate that it feels like that, but also I want to be understood to an extent, or at least I think for me, I have a level of confidence where as long as I feel like I'm coming across in a way that I'm comfortable with, if somebody is then like, no, you're bullshit, then that's fine to me, you know, and that's why maybe podcasting works for me, where I'm like, okay, as long as
it's good, but I... It's also good because it's like you are like a voice that maybe people don't hear often, like, you know, in terms of a male saying like, I want kids. Like, and so that's, you know, part of being a podcaster or being someone who does work with like the public. It's like, by you actively saying that, then, you know, maybe other men would be like, oh, actually, yeah, like, oh, it's okay for me to say I want kids as well, because it's like, you know, it's not something, you know, I was just on Bumble before, and on Bumble, I think it's Bumble or Hinge or whatever, you can say like, you know, do you want children? And like, I have never put on my dating profile like, I want children, but today I just downloaded the apps again. And so I was putting on like, oh yeah, like I want children. I was like, no, fuck it. This is what I want. This is what, you know, I hope to get, you know, in the next few years. And it's like, I'm just going to put on there. But when I look at the male profiles, it's like none of them say want children. So it's kind of interesting, like in that. And I don't know if that's just like, stigma or just they just don't want kids, or it's Berlin. I don't know. Like, it's different.
Yeah. Now, one more thing I will say on that before we go to our rules of the game is there's something that I don't quite get yet. And that is that I think it's more common for men to want to be a dad than it is to want to be a parent. And that sounds like the same thing. But what I mean by that is it's perhaps something to do with how we're raised and how we're not encouraged to plan our lives in terms of being around minding kids as much, and more so, you know, the idea of like, okay, provide for the household. And so maybe that's why sometimes it makes sense as a bit of a title of like, you want to be a dad, but the parenting, the looking after bit, we're not as encouraged to aspire to. And it can be easy to soak that up. So like, logically, we know that absolutely parents should both be contributing. They should both know how to look after their own kid. But sometimes the culture and the way we're raised can take a little bit of time to catch up. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. And it's funny because I put on my dating profile years ago. I think it was like a couple of years ago, when I was like, and at the moment I'm so attracted to dads. Like, I'm, because I live in Berlin, I'm in Prinz Lauberg, which is like the family area. It's like where all the kids and the dads and like your parents and whatever. It's more that vibe around here. So for me, it's like, I'm like getting out of my house and I'm seeing all these like hot dads with their like strollers. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so hot. And then, you know, I'm talking to this guy at the moment who's like renovating his house and he's got kids, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so hot. Like, it's just, but it's weird how like, you know, in my early 20s, I would never have probably found that attractive. But now I'm just like, oh my God, that's so hot. Oh my God. like a dude with a stroller. Oh yes, sign me up. Like I'm for it. So like a stay-at-home dad for me is like, yeah, I put in this, the profile years ago, I put in the profile, like looking for a stay-at-home dad. And then I just got some weird, randomly creepy messages. But that to me is so hot. Like, I'm just like, oh yeah, stay-at-home dad so I can go off and tour. And like you're looking after the kids. Oh, perfect. That's what I want. So it's, you know, it's just how it fits in your lifestyle.
And I don't think we talk about that enough. Parenting is attractive. Like a lot of young parents that I know, they talk to me about like the new ways in which they appreciated that person. Like it's a new kind of love to see that person mind your child and show that much care towards this kid.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was going to...
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying like there's been a bit of an argument recently. I just saw something the other day with like Joe Rogan came out and said something about how paternity leave is bullshit and how the men should be out working. And like, I mean, in America, like they don't really have much paternity leave. And I think it's bullshit because I think it's like this thing where they, you know, I grew up and my dad was always working and I never really saw my dad. And so it's like you don't really have as much of an emotional connection with maybe a father because he has been told he has to provide. And I think like, you know, here in Europe, in particular Scandinavia, like their paternity leave, like I think in Sweden, they have 16 months paternity leave. Like it's amazing. And I think that that is so important for children to have a balance of having both parents at home and having that connection with their parents. It's very, very, very important. So yeah, I'm all for paternity leave. I'm all for stay-at-home dads. I'm just for dads right now. I'm all for it. But that's another thing.
And so on that note, shall we move on to our rules of the game? I have not yet thought of one, but is there something you try and live by with dating or relationships that you might recommend?
I think I'm gonna circle back to what we said earlier about like feeling the energy and just like and finding these like small parts of you just like actively really. So I went on like this great date with a guy a couple of weeks ago and and like the date was so amazing and I felt really good about it. And then afterwards I kind of, without trying to be too overthinking everything, but I was just kind of like, okay, like these are just things like maybe I should look out for because I don't know this person very well. We had one date. It was amazing. But then you sort of just like, it's like a, I don't know, just taking notes and being like, okay, maybe just like that was a little bit not off, but like if he said that again, then I would be like, oh, okay. So I think just feeling your intuition and kind of not being blinded by maybe the superficial things that come up and really making sure that, you know, your values are kind of the same and you, what your wants are the same as well, because it was, yeah, I think if you don't want the same thing, then at the end of the day, it's not going to really work. So that's, I think, yeah, trusting the intuition, the old intuition down there, because it does know, it knows. But I think we block it out with alcohol and other stuff sometimes, or superficial things or sex or whatever it is. So I think that's, yeah, one thing that I'm really actively trying to live by now. So it's that that's my guiding light.
For sure. Do not ignore your gut is what I'm getting from that. Very important. Mm. And a little bit similar then, I'll circle back to something we were also talking about earlier, which was, I briefly mentioned this idea of sometimes your awareness can improve, but that doesn't necessarily mean your behaviour does. And so you can still find yourself getting tempted by choices that aren't the best choices for you. But sometimes it feels like there's a safety in that, whether it's, you know, a type of dynamic that you find familiar, even if you know it's not the best for you, or whether it's just you feel like, oh, I don't know if I have any good options. They're probably not the best choice, but maybe depending where you're at, you might choose it anyway. And I've been thinking about how sometimes we're drawn to those two extremes. We're drawn to the ideal version of perhaps who we want in our head, or we're like, okay, this seems a lower stakes, safe option where I know how this will play out, even if it won't play out that well.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But again, it comes back to that thing of like, you don't have to be in a relationship. Like that's at the end of the day, like you can maybe be dating like two guys that are like, oh, I'm not really into these kind of men, like whatever, but they're there and I would rather have them than be alone. And I think during the past, you know, last nearly 2 years of this new world that we're living in, it's like it has taught us that, you know, particularly if you are single or whatever, like how to be alone. And I think that's a big kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's better sometimes to just, you know, be alone and work on yourself than actually be in these bad relationships. that or just aren't going anywhere and you don't see a future with that person. So that's another big thing I think about a lot when I'm dating. I'm like, oh, am I the toxic person? Like, kind of stuff. But that's, you know, that's just me maybe overthinking and stuff. But I think that was, for me, I was sort of dating a couple of guys that I was like, I don't like these guys at all. But then it was kind of just like, and then I decided, I was like, there's no point, because like, if they get attached to me, then that's just going to be horrible and like things like that. So, and that's where I just kind of went, you know what, no, just be happy and be single. And that's the biggest lesson that I've learned in this like past 2 years, is like, it's okay to be single. It's okay. It's okay.
And I'm going to essentially jump on that and be like, yeah, that's my rule. Perfectly grand to be single. Amazing. I am someone that is comfortably single most of the time. I can advocate and cheerlead for that. So boom, new rule of the game. Perfect. All right. Perfect. We will wrap up there. If people want to find more of your work, see you as you journey around the world in these somewhat post-COVID times, how do we find you?
How do you find me? Oh my God, I'm so great. There's a little thing called Google. You can Google my name, Elena Gabrielle, but I have my Instagram, my YouTube, Elena Gabrielle. You can also check me out on TikTok. On my website has all of my tour dates, elenagabrielle.com. I'll be touring to Australia, Europe and Canada next year, early next year. So yeah, check out all of that fun stuff. And just Google me.
Love it. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.